Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Okay. All right. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live on Block Talk Radio, straight out of the city of Chicago. And it is warm, actually, outside. In some ways, it's warm. It's not winter. It's fall-like weather in January in Chicago. And I hope it's, you know, wherever you are in the world, I hope that you are, comfortable, too. I mean, I'm very comfortable. And thank you guys for tuning in to the George Wilder Jr. Show once again. We've been on the air. We've been doing this for quite some time, and it's almost unreal. I found something that I, like doing. I enjoy doing, and I'm still doing it. And that's something. And I would say the same thing for you out there. If you don't know what the hell you want to do with your life, find something that you want to do it and enjoy it and do it forever. It has to be something you enjoy doing and make sure it's legal. And I've been doing the show for a long time and I totally enjoy it. I mean, I enjoy it, guest or no guest, but I always know people out there are participating because a lot of people don't want to call in. They don't. Some people do. Some people will just like to listen, and that's fine. That's great. Some people podcast the show after it's done. That's great. That's beautiful. The show has a rating system, so at least I've gone and checked it out, so it's there. And if there's something you want to do in your life, find out what you want to do. Find out what you're good at. you got to find out what you're good at. You know, everybody's good at something. And there's so many people out here that they don't even know what they're good at. You know, I don't know what I'm good at. I just don't know. Everybody good at something. I mean, legally. I mean, something that will not break the law, you know. Something that you enjoy doing, as I've said, something that you enjoy doing. And I understand there's a lot of young people out here haven't made up their mind about what they want to do with their lives yet. But hey, you got to do it quickly, because if you don't do it quickly, the world is going to pass you by. People are going to walk over you, step on you, and just kick you out of the way if you don't know what you want to do in your life. And you better decide quickly. And I've been trying to help people around here decide quickly what they want to do with their lives. You know, time is running out. We got Donald Trump as president. You better do something with your life if you haven't done anything already, you know. And I've always said to people, get to know people who know people. It's been said before, get to know the right people. Get to know people who are about something. Get to know people who are interesting. Get to know people who can further your career or whatever you want to do in life. You know, if you're going to, I've said this before, if you want to go someplace in life, you got to stay in tune or get in tune or get involved with the right people. I mean, yeah, if you're standing on the corner every night, that's not going to get you anywhere. If you're just playing video games every night and doing nothing, that's not going to get you anywhere. If you're just watching other people get places and you're not getting anywhere, that's not going to get you anywhere. Because I know a lot of people have done that. They just sit around and they're not leaders. They're called spectators. They watch and observe other people doing their thing, if I can say, doing it, or other talented people doing what they love and making money at it. You know, you don't want to be a spectator. You don't want to be a person that just watches, sit back and watch other people go places and do things and be successful. You don't want to be that type of person. You want to be a leader. You want to be proactive. I mean, if you're not proactive, then you can forget it. Proactive means just going out there, getting what you want, and not letting anybody stand in your way. If you don't want anything, then I can't help you. If you're not looking for a better life, or if you're not looking to be someone or make something of yourself, and you guys know who I'm talking to, then this is not the show for you, okay? Because this show is all about making the world a better place, motivating, inspiring, educating, and empowering people out there, you know, yeah. Even with the guest on the show, that, you know, occasionally come by the show. And that's what it's all about. This is about you and not me. I mean, I'm like some other people. I've had mine. I've been there. I've done this. I've done that. What I have and what I haven't got, I won't have. But I'm pretty, pretty lucky to have this radio show. I'm doing something. I have a voice. I'm a public speaker. I'm out here over the air, internet. I'm all over the world on this radio show. What are you doing? There's people, the George Wilder Jr. show. Yeah, I know there's people who have laughed and joked and tried to take the show over. Oh, that ain't nothing. He ain't doing nothing. But you know what? People like me who do these podcasts, I think majority of the people are talented. I think they are talented, you know, and you have to be talented for this, and you have to have a thick skin for this. You know, I mean, you're not going to be, you're not going to get a worldwide audience overnight or in 2 weeks or in 6 months. You got to stick with it. You got to stick with it, and you have to stick with your schedule. It'll come. It will come. And people ask me, do you get paid for that? You get paid? Yes. Well, yeah, kind of. Yeah. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting out of Chicago. And I want to say this again. I want to reiterate this because this is very important. If you, and people, you know who I'm talking to, or you know who I should be talking to. Majority of us are, you know, pretty well off and stuff like that. But there's people out there not. There's people out there who are, you know, just don't have what it takes to be a leader. And I've had someone on the show about a few months ago talking about leadership, talking about taking action and getting your life together. I've had a bunch of authors. Okay. I've had a bunch of authors on the show talking about motivating people to do and to be the best they can in their lives, because there's too many people out here who are just about nothing, and they are proud to be about nothing. And that is not the way to go. That's not the way to go. Being about nothing. If you're about nothing, you're going to wind up homeless. You want to do that? Because there's too many people out here homeless. Homelessness is climbing each and every day, all the time. You know, you don't want to be one of those victims, but you will if you don't wind up doing something with your life, making something of yourself, making someone proud of you. That's what you want to do. Make someone proud of you. Make someone proud to want to stand next to you. It's proud to want to invite you over for dinner. Proud to be in your circle. You know, you want to be someone where other people think of you as interesting. Okay, if people do not think of you as being interested, they are not going to pay you any attention. We are in a world, especially the 21st century, where life moves. Life really moves. And if you don't move with life, if you don't keep up, you're going to be left behind. And that's no lie. You're going to be left behind in the damn dust. And nobody's going to feel sorry for you. Nobody's going to give you any sympathy. They're just going to walk right over you to get to where they want to be. They don't care anything about you. That's when you should come to the realization that you have to be a leader. You have to move. You have to be, a mover and a shaker. Because if you're not a mover and a shaker, nobody's going to notice anything about you. If you don't talk up, if you don't speak up, I tell my son that all the time. I say, if you want to be a leader, you got to talk. I mean, a leader talks. I mean, you can't be a leader if you don't say a damn thing. You can't lead anyone if you're shy. You can't lead anyone if you're afraid, if you're scared. You can't lead anyone if you're just not a leader, then you are a spectator. All you do is watch people. You follow people. I mean, that you're interested in, but you don't do anything. I've known people like that. You're not going to get anywhere like that. If you have talent, if you have the God-given talent that I know you have and many others know you have, put it to work. Do something with your life. Do not just, you know, wish and dream about being this person or that person. Be proactive. Go out there and find what you want to do. It's not going to come to you in the house. It's not going to come to you at the gym or at school. You have to go out and whatever you want, you go out and get it. If you want to be an actor, then start being in plays. Check out the playhouses around your neighborhood or in your area. If you want to be a teacher, do the things that it takes to be a teacher. Going to school, getting good grades, going to high school, going to college, majoring in education. You have to go after what you want. You want to be a comedian, want to tell jokes. You have to go out there and get what you want. It's not going to come to you. And if you feel that you don't have it, well, I just ain't have it. It ain't me. I can't do that. Then you're going to be a bum. You have to go out there and seek whatever it is that you want. Find out what you are doing and make money at it. What you love doing, what you want to do, and make money at it. If you don't make money at it, at least have fun doing it. And then maybe the monetary aspect of it will follow later. But what you want to do, you want to find out what you can do. Don't just marvel at other people or like other people or be a fan of other. Have people being, instead of being a fan of other people, make those people fans of yours. They're your fans. Let them be your fans. Stop being other people, the fan of other people, and be your own. And let them be fans of you and what you do. You know, and I think about this past election where you had Hillary Clinton, 69 years old, and she almost just, some say she did win the White House. But the fact is, she's 69. Bernie Sanders, 74, 75 years old. These people running for president of the United States at these ages. Donald Trump, 70 years old. My point here, folks, is that do not let age be a barrier. If you want to do something, you want to go out and do something. Oh, I'm too old. I'm 45 and I'm too old for that. You are not too old to do anything you want to do. If you're 45, 50 years old, you can still make it in life. You just have to get out there and do it. Don't ever feel that your age is slowing you down or age is holding you back, because it's not. The only thing that's going to hold you back is you. You're holding you back. I don't care if you're 60, 65 years old. If there is something out there you want to do, you have a dream, you want to prevail at this or that, do not let age hold you back. Did being 69, did that hold Hillary Clinton back? Being 74, did that hold Bernie Sanders back? Being 70 years old, did that hold Donald Trump back? Age has no barrier when it comes to fulfilling your dream. You may be 30 years old, 35, and may feel that your life is over. Your life has not even started. If you think your life is over, then it's over. But in reality, it's just, even at 40, it's getting started, just getting started. If you had a dream that you dreamed of being something or becoming something or being a part of society out here and you know, helping others, you know, I mean, that's a lifelong dream. And making good money, you know, you have to go, if you want to be a plumber, I mean, you have to go out here and be proactive. Whatever you want to be, you can be. Do not let age interfere or be obstructive to what you're trying to seek out in your life. And this is very important, folks. I mean, this is very important because there's too many people out here in the world today figure that their lives are meaningless. They're not going to ever amount to anything, but only getting up, going to work, coming home, going to work, going to work, coming home, back and forth, back and forth. I was in that rut. I knew. I used to say, damn, all I do is get up, go to work, come back home, get up, go to work, come back home for years and years and years. And I'm saying something has to change. I mean, this is a monotony, and it wasn't fun. I wasn't enjoying it. I'm pretty sure a lot of you aren't enjoying it either, but it's something we have to do in order to pay the bills. Get up, go to work, take a bath, take a shower. It's always back and forth to work. And sometimes you're doing extra hours at work, and sometimes you're even doing doubles. So it's something. There's nothing wrong with holding down a job. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, but what is a lot better than just holding down a job is opening up your own business. Why keep working for someone else? You know, if you're working for someone else, map out, charter out a road one day down the road where you're going to be working for yourself. I mean, because if you keep working for yourself, going to work every day, get up, go to work every day for years, and all of a sudden you find yourself fired, thrown out the door. What have you accomplished? What have you accomplished for 20 years? You're fired. You know, and I've always said this too, that when you're working for someone else, you're making them rich. You're putting money in their pocket. They're paying you a little bit, but your work, your labor is making them millions, you know, and suddenly down the road, you can't do what you do no more. They're going to fire you, and then you're out of work. They're going to hire somebody in your place and pay them less money, and they're going to be doing more than what you've done when you were working for the company. It's all about making something of yourself, being proactive, going out there, finding what you want to do. Stop working for someone else. I'm not saying do not work at all. I mean, before I found what I wanted to do, I had to work for other people. But eventually, you know, I fell into what I really love doing, and that's broadcasting and writing. So you you guys out there, you know, you got talent. You have the talent. You were born with it. You just have to reach down inside of yourself and pull that talent out and go out here and just make a difference, especially start making money for yourself instead of making it for some other company and they're giving you a little piece of it. You want it all. And to do all of that, you have to be a leader. You have to be a leader. All right, we're going to take a small break right here. Folks, we're going to be right back. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show from City of Chicago. Wow, I really do rant sometimes. Here we go. Is it? Come on in. Okay, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting from Chicago, Illinois. It's a beautiful city. The people, no matter what you hear about on the news, it's a great town. It's a wonderful place to live. It's expensive, but it's great to live here, and I love it. I'm on the north side in my studio. We're near the lake, and we are having balmy winter weather for January, but which is fine, which is cool with me. All right, let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show.
Hi, George. It's Corby Mitlide. You asked me to call tonight to talk to you about my book.
I know. Self-development?
That's me.
Hey, thanks. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from upstate New York, Schoharie County. It's about an hour outside of Albany.
Okay, how's the weather there?
There's a wonderful German word called "nasskalt," and it's nasty, it's cold, it's raw, it's dank. We had freezing rain and ice this morning, but my office is warm and dry, so I'm real good.
Me too. I'm inside. I'm good too. All right. Thank you for that little bit. Okay, I try to break the ice a little bit before we get started, but that's great. It's dry here. It's rain. Actually, it's rainy. It's foggy. It's a mess too, but it's not that cold. All right, Corby Midland, tell us a little bit of something about yourself before you get into your book.
Okay, I have been lots of things. I've been an actress and an inspirational speaker and a video producer and a legal assistant and an executive recruiter for engineering and manufacturing. What I do now, though, is I'm an intuitive counselor. Some people would say psychic medium, and I'd say, yeah, part of it. That's what I do full time. But the book came out of what I've gone through in my own life over the past 30, 40 years. You're talking to someone who's done 3 bouts of breast cancer, 2 divorces, and the death of all 3 of her parents. And I'm still here to talk about it. No pity party.
Well, we're glad you're still here to talk about it.
In a nutshell.
Okay. We're glad you're here to talk about it because, you know, we all go through trauma in our lives, and we live to talk about it. We live to write about it. We live to, we live on. What can I say? And the name of your book is it just self-development?
Clean
or
out. It's,
go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
The self-development project. Yeah, the self-development project is the overall series. This first book is called Clean Out Your Life Closet.
And when you say clean out your life closet, you mean like getting rid of the clutter that's in your life to make your life a little bit, your destination in life a little bit, maybe clearer to where you want to go or something like that?
Yes. There's so much detritus, crud. We still have in the closet because of old beliefs, old ideas, old things we may have wanted when we're 24, but now we're 62. So the book covers 4 things: clarity, simplicity, how to live well with less, including the intangibles, going with the flow and adaptability, and making friends with stress. It's the 21st century. It's going to be here. We might as well learn to work with it.
Okay. All right. So if someone was had a few of those things like stress, and how would they, from your book and from your perspective, how would they cope with it?
Well, for one thing, they have to make a difference between good stress and bad stress. Good stress is that extra zing we have when we're in a sports competition, when we're auditioning for theater or a film, when we're getting ready to take a test or do an interview. Bad stress is the overwhelming push that we all get. Chronic stress. You always say yes when you want to say no. You are so exhausted by everything you have to do, you don't have the wherewithal to do it. You can't hold thoughts well. Your blood pressure is up. And so those are the things where you need what I call the instant stress busters. And they can be as simple as something, get up and move. If you're sitting at your desk all day, get up, move. They can be go grab a cup of tea. They can be go find your fur person and play with it. Find music. But also set your boundaries. That's one of the fastest way to ratchet down stress.
Do you think stress can become deadly if you don't do anything about it?
For one thing, it's why people have breakdowns. It's why there is so much insane violence in America today, because we're all under 24/7 stress. Think about it. 40 years ago, you'd go to work, then you'd come home. There was not the constant texting. There wasn't the phone at your hip. There wasn't the boss that said, if I'm not taking any time off, neither are you. We didn't need 2 incomes in order to just keep our heads above water. So now we've got to find 21st century coping mechanisms. And the 2 kinds of stress that I particularly talk about, stress as the shot across the bow and stress as mission creep. Stress as the shot across the bow is when all of a sudden what feels normal, you collapse with. For instance, with me, it was constant work, just grabbing something that wasn't smart food, had too much sugar in it. All of a sudden, I started having spikes in blood pressure and heart palpitations. The shot across the bow was eat smart and stop the sugar. Now, stress as mission creep, that's the whole thing where I say no is a fabulous idea. The example I use, there was a woman who loved making baby clothes. Organization asked her to make some for them. Another one said, well, could you do something for our fundraiser? And all of a sudden, what used to be a delight was now too much for her with too many deadlines. And it was all everybody else telling her what to do. It wasn't her pleasure. Because she didn't say no, it was like the frog in a pot of water that didn't know it was going to die till it was boiling.
Yeah.
That's mission creep.
Okay, would you say that basically what you're saying is too much of what you do, if you're doing too much in a small amount of time, that can lead to stress.
Yes. And part of it is don't be afraid of what other people are going to think. Don't say yes out of guilt. Guilt is the most useless emotion in the world.
Some of these elements
doesn't do you any good.
I was going to say some of these, what are you talking about here? Most of what you're talking about here is also incorporated in your book.
Mm-hmm. That's right. For one thing, the first thing we talk about is simplicity. Think about life as the tiny house. And when you look at things, you decide, do I really need these anymore?
If I had
a year to live, what would be important to me? One of the other things, intangible clutter, what can I get rid of? That's made up of the tasks and the relationships and the obligations that waste your time. They don't feed you, they don't give you any benefit, and you need to hip check them out of the way.
How successful have you been with this?
Wildly. The reason that this book happened, besides the fact that everybody kept saying, oh, you should write a book. It's like, I want to stop hearing that. I started doing weekly blogs on Facebook, and I had a year planned out and 4 blogs a month on a particular theme. And this came from my own life experience, also experience with some of the thousands of clients that I have worked with over the years. And everybody will recognize themselves in this book. I make a point of telling stories that every man and every woman could understand. I mean, look, we're not all size 2 blondes from Atlanta with a trust fund. Sometimes we are both doing jobs and we've got kids and bills to pay. And so you don't want really expensive, yes, go to this spa and do this. It's what can I do right now where I am? And so that's where this book comes from.
Okay. Okay. Are you going to be working on another book?
Yes. As I said, this is the first actually of 3. After you've cleaned out your life closet, then you need to pack it with more stuff, the stuff you really love. And that's going to be called the big reboot. Once you've cleaned out and packed it with the new stuff, how do you create the life you want? That's called Be Your Own Masterpiece.
Oh, wow. Author Corby Midland on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Do you have an excerpt? Can you read us an excerpt of this book?
Absolutely. You choose the subject. You can have clarity, simplicity, adaptability, or stress. What would you like?
We talked about stress already, so let's try clarity.
Clarity. Okay. Then we're going to start out with the idea of the joy of a clear telescope. All right?
Yeah.
Now, here we go. From the massive keck structures on Hawaii's Mauna Kea to the simple ones that dot backyards on cloudless nights, telescopes transform hazy vistas into brilliant clarity. Viewing a distant star can activate wonder, a desire for adventure, and a profound sense of the vastness of the universe. But no matter what such breathtaking vistas trigger, our newfound clarity changes our worldview. Like those stars powdering the skies, our lives are full of dreams, projects, plans, and ambitions. We can work on prioritizing our heart's desires. We can figure out how to give ourselves enough time to do them. We can let go of other people's dreams for us that have nothing to do with who we really are. Most importantly, we can decide what is essential for us in the long run. Once we've acknowledged the goals and the dreams we want in our life, we may still be left with a hazy mass of possibilities. How do you pick a focus? Must you choose one dream out of many? Can your different goals support one another, or do you have one overriding desire? Here are some steps. Number one, decide to use your telescope. The decision to seek clarity is an action that will bring motion and excitement to the process of getting clear. Clean the lens. No matter how beautiful the vista is outside, you'll never see it through a dirty window. So you need to make a difference between what's urgent, do the laundry, run the errands, play with the cat, and what's important, the things you truly want to do. Focus your telescope, and that's mindfulness. When we're mindful, we pay attention to our life. The present moment is very much alive, yet we look at what is going on both in and around us without an emotional charge. With clarity, you can aim your arrow true. Then you aim your telescope. That's meditation, consolidating your energy. Then you adjust the lens. Cultivate simple habits. Get dressed every day. Turn off the techno tempters when you need to stay focused. Stay away from people who live in Neverland. Avoid people whose lives are filled with no, not, and never, who make promises but never keep them, and who are habitually late. Find your tribe. Your tribe is composed of those who are excited by life, whose direction and purpose are at the tip of their tongues, and whose lives reflect their goals and desires with promise and effort combined. And avoid the doom and gloom in the world.
Wow, this is great.
Then
that sounds great.
Got your telescope. Thank you.
Okay, that was great. That was I'm sorry to cut you off, but that was great. That was wonderful.
Okay.
And I'm gonna get a copy of this book myself because I'm gonna give it straight to my son. I think he needs to read something like that. Especially on clarity,
wonderful.
Right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Tell us where we can find the book. Give us a website or where we can go buy it and look it
Absolutely.
Up or whatever. Okay.
Okay. Well, it will be released January 31st. Right now, you can download the first chapter free at cleanoutyourlifecloset.com. And the Kindle version is available for pre-order on Amazon.
Okay. Thank you very much, author Corby Mitchell on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thank you very much. Would you like a link to this show so you can put it on your website or whatever and people can come by, your fans or readers?
I would love that.
Come by and listen to you on this show.
Thanks.
All right. No problem. We'll get it. Sorry for talking over you. We'll get that out as soon as possible. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, seemed like we have a little bit of a delay here. Anyway, that was Corby Mitlin on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We will be right back, folks, if we can do this. Do we have that? All right, here we go, right here.
I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. Any essential distinction between Donald Trump being merely an idiot marionette belonging to Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump behaving like an active Russian agent has been fully erased in the course of just over 1 week, and it has been erased by Donald Trump. When the damning stain of illegitimacy grows on this presidency week by week, hour by hour, when every moment of the political discourse of this nation becomes consumed by a debate over not whether he has been placed in office by the efforts of a foreign power, but a debate over how much of that subversion he knew in advance, he will have no one to blame.
It was important for him to be briefed because the plan was to brief the president-elect as well, that these allegations had been circulating.
Pamela, hang on. We're going to go to Chicago, listen to the Attorney General Loretta Lynch talking about the civil rights investigation into the Chicago Police Department.
With me because they are the indispensable members of the team that led to this announcement today. Now, one of my highest priorities as Attorney General has been to ensure that every American enjoys police protection that is lawful, that is responsive and transparent. But as the events of recent years in Ferguson, in Baltimore, Cleveland, and many other cities have made clear, far too many Americans feel that they do not receive that kind of law enforcement. And far too many communities suffer because of painful divisions between police officers and citizens, divisions that make it significantly harder to reduce crime, to expand opportunity, and to ensure that every American, including our police officers, can be safe and secure in their neighborhoods. Now, in December of 2015, as part of that work, I announced that the Department of Justice, after careful review and extensive consultation with state and local officials and community leaders, was opening an investigation into whether the Chicago Police Department had engaged in a pattern or practice of violations of the Constitution or federal statutory law. And for the past 13 months, our investigators have worked tirelessly to obtain a full and an accurate and an impartial picture of policing in Chicago. They have conducted hundreds of interviews with citizens, with officials, with officers. They have reviewed thousands of pages of documents. They have observed Chicago Police Department officers on the job. And on the basis of this exhaustive review, the Department of Justice has concluded that there is reasonable cause to believe that the Chicago Police Department engages in a pattern or practice of use of excessive force in violation of the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. Our investigation found that this pattern or practice is in no small part the result of severely deficient training procedures and accountability systems. Now, as my colleagues will explain in greater detail, CPD does not give its officers the training they need to do their jobs safely, effectively, and lawfully. It fails to properly collect and analyze data, including data on misconduct complaints and training deficiencies, and it does not adequately review use of force incidents to determine whether force was appropriate or lawful, or whether the use of force could have been avoided altogether. All of these issues are compounded by poor supervision and oversight, leading to low officer morale and an erosion in officer accountability. These are serious problems, and they bear serious consequences for all Chicagoans. As I said when I announced this investigation, the systems and policies that fail ordinary citizens also fail the vast majority of Chicago Police Department officers who risk their lives every day to serve and protect the people of Chicago. And during the course of our investigation, the department heard from countless officers who were themselves disillusioned and discouraged by strained trust, by inadequate training, poor oversight, and inattention to officer wellness and safety. Now, those officers are proud to wear the badge, but they recognize that they lack the support, both from the community and from the city, to properly do their jobs. And they understand that repairing trust with the communities that they serve will require difficult and meaningful reforms. Now, to Chicago's credit, the city has not been standing still since we announced our investigation at the end of 2015. Under the leadership of Mayor Emanuel and Superintendent Johnson, Chicago Police Department has taken a number of encouraging steps to improve oversight and to encourage community-oriented policing. But our report makes clear that there is still considerable work to be done, work that will require federal partnership and independent oversight. And that is why I am pleased to announce today at the Department of Justice and the City of Chicago have agreed to begin negotiations on an independently monitored, court-enforceable consent decree. And in the days ahead, we will continue speaking to local residents, local authorities, to officers, to ordinary citizens, to gather their perspectives about the challenges facing this city and the changes needed to address them. Now, of course, this announcement comes at a critical juncture for this proud city. Chicago is grappling with a deeply troubling rise in violent crime, one that has already claimed far too many lives. Now, fighting violent crime has long been a priority for the Justice Department as well. And we at the Justice Department have brought our full resources to bear on this issue, from the FBI, ATF, U.S. Marshals Service, and the DEA, who've participated in joint task forces to combat violence, to the department's violence reduction network. Now, our efforts to work closely with local authorities to fight violence in a number of ways began long before we opened this investigation, and they will continue during and after this investigation. And no one understands that better than Zach Fardin. Under his outstanding leadership, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Illinois has worked literally around the clock to tackle gun violence, gang cases, and other serious crimes afflicting this great city. And at the same time that Zach's office actively partnered with our Civil Rights Division on this pattern and practice investigation, the prosecutors in his office in 2016 charged the highest number of illegal firearm cases in any year since 2004. So the U.S. Attorney's Office here and federal investigative agencies have truly ramped up their efforts to help stem the recent rise in violence. But as I have seen firsthand from my community policing tour, that work is undermined if the community does not trust law enforcement. And that's why, in addition to increasing intelligence efforts and enhancing crime-fighting operations, we're also working with the city on a range of other critical initiatives, from youth outreach to counseling for the victims of crime. And these efforts will continue, and they will only be strengthened by the reforms that we are announcing today. Because successfully reducing and preventing violent crime requires a collaborative and trusting relationship between officers and residents. And where that relationship is broken, as it is in far too many of Chicago's neighborhoods, it's much harder to solve crimes and reduce violence. By making the changes necessary to bring constitutional, community-oriented policing to Chicago, the city and the police department will place itself in a much stronger position to combat the scourge of violence. And finally, I want to commend the people of Chicago for their patience and for their resilience throughout this long process. Community police relations is an especially difficult issue. It taps into long histories, deep beliefs, and strong opinions, and there's no lack of strong opinions here in Chicago. But it also forces us to honestly acknowledge the ways in which our society has fallen short in extending the protection of our laws to all Americans. It does not yield to swift or simple solutions. But meaningful change is never easy. The task of realizing the promise of our country has always been hard. And here in Chicago, thanks to the determination and the commitment of countless public officials, police officers, advocates, and citizens, we've taken the first step towards meaningful change and a brighter future. The people of this city have recognized that there is work to be done, and they've committed themselves to seeing that work through to the end. And the Department of Justice will stand beside you along the way. And I'm confident that when we are finished, when this review is finished and the changes are set in place, Chicago will be a stronger, a safer, and a more united city for everyone who calls it home. And at this time, I'll turn things over to Vanita Gupta, the head of the Civil Rights Division, who will say more about our findings. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good morning, and thank you, Attorney General Lynch. And thank you also to U.S. Attorney Zach Fardin. I am deeply grateful for the extraordinary work of the DOJ team, of the Civil Rights Division, and the U.S. Attorney's Office here in Chicago that has worked tirelessly over the past 13 months. I also want to thank Mayor Rahm Emanuel and Superintendent Eddie Johnson for their cooperation during this investigation and for their commitment to reform. And I want to thank the people of Chicago, including the city's police officers, for engaging with the Justice Department over the last many months because you care about your city so much. Since we launched this investigation in December of 2015, the Justice Department has deployed our largest team ever in a policing pattern or practice case to conduct a thorough and fair investigation of the Chicago Police Department and Independent Police Review Authority. We reviewed thousands of documents and hundreds of force reports. We met with community members, city officials, and each of the police unions. We visited each of Chicago's 22 police districts, went on 60 ride-alongs, spoke to 340 members of the CPD, from command staff to line officers. We also met with over 90 community organizations and heard from more than 1,000 Chicagoans. And 11 independent subject matter experts, most of them current or former law enforcement officials, assisted with this investigation. As the Attorney General said, we found that the Chicago Police Department engages in a pattern or practice of using excessive force, including deadly force and non-deadly force. This pattern includes, for example, shooting at people who present no immediate threat and tasing people for not following verbal commands. This conduct doesn't only harm residents, it endangers officers. It results in avoidable deaths and injuries and trauma. And it erodes police community trust, trust that truly is the cornerstone of public safety. We found that this pattern of unconstitutional force is largely attributable to systemic deficiencies within the CPD and the city. We found that CPD does not adequately train its officers to use the appropriate amount of force. For example, we observed training on deadly force that used a video made decades ago with guidance inconsistent with both current law and internal policy. We found that CPD officers do not fully report their uses of force and that supervisors are not appropriately reviewing these uses of force. We found that Chicago's accountability systems are broken. Many complaints that should be investigated are not. And when investigations do occur, they are glacially slow and staffed by overworked and undertrained investigators who often fail to obtain basic witness statements and evidence. Officers are too rarely held accountable for misconduct, and when they are, discipline is unpredictable and ineffective. We found that CPD's approach to data collection on the use of force prevents CPD from spotting dangerous trends, responding with remedial training, and sharing information that would be useful to the public. We found that CPD's promotion systems are not transparent. And we found that CPD is failing to provide officers with the support that they need to deal with the stress and trauma of their jobs. We make these findings acutely aware that this is a time of significant challenge for Chicago residents and police officers. Gun violence has spiked, relations between police officers and residents is strained, and officer morale is suffering. But really, this context only heightens the importance and urgency of our findings. The failures that we identified and that we heard about from residents and officers alike have deeply eroded community trust, particularly in African American and Latino communities suffering the most from gun violence on Chicago's South and West Sides. These neighborhoods are the hardest hit by CPD's pattern of unlawful force and breakdown in the city's accountability systems. These breakdowns breed distrust and undermine police legitimacy in the very communities that need fair, proactive policing the most. Distrust of law enforcement makes residents unwilling to share information, and that makes it harder for officers to solve and prevent crimes. Addressing the deeply rooted police community distrust is a critical part of fighting crime and reducing violence in Chicago. Chicago's leaders, including especially the mayor and superintendent, of course, are aware of many of these problems, and to their credit, have been working to address them, such as revamping IPRA, bringing officers new de-escalation training, rolling out body cameras, and adopting a new policy on the release of videos, just among some.
You've been watching a news conference from Chicago where the U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch announced the results of a 13-month investigation into the Chicago Police Department, and they found that the Chicago Police Department had a pattern of excessive force, exhibited a pattern of excessive force, and importantly, the Chicago Police Department has agreed, the City of Chicago, to enter a consent decree with the Justice Department to work on policing in that city going forward. It was also noted right there that the minority community in Chicago has been disproportionately hit by this use of excessive force. This all stemmed from the release of a video more than a year ago of Laquan McDonald being shot and killed by a police officer. I want to bring in Paul Callen, CNN legal analyst. And Paul, this was an interesting news conference right there. This was a 13-month civil rights investigation. They did find a pattern of excessive force. They did announce a consent decree. Explain to me what this all means.
The Justice Department has conducted a number of these evaluations of cities across the United States. They did it in Newark, New Jersey, for instance, where there were repeated complaints of excessive force by police departments. And what they do is they come in and they give recommendations as to how to improve policing, and maybe there'll be increased funding that will be found for the Chicago police, hopefully, as a result of this. But I have to say, John, I find it to be very, very unusual to hear this in Chicago at this time, because Chicago has one of the most brutal homicide rates in America, over 750 killings, I think, this year so far. Last year, I think there were 3,500 shootings in the mostly minority neighborhoods of Chicago. So a lot of people are saying that policing is not aggressive enough in Chicago. And I think that there will be many who will look at this report and say this is going to force the police to back off even more from aggressively policing the dangerous neighborhoods out of fear that they'll face federal sanctions of some kind if they're aggressive in policing.
Let me just tell you what was said about this, because Loretta Lynch addressed that. First of all, she said the excessive force stemmed from deficient training and poor supervision, and she did note the rising number of homicides in Chicago, the plague of homicides in that city over the last year or two that has been on the rise, though not to record levels, but it's certainly been on the rise in a very alarming way. She says the pattern of excessive force has eroded trust in minority communities and has prevented people from coming forward with information that may help in investigations, may prevent more murders. Mm. So what they seem to be trying to do, Paul, was say that maybe all these things are tied up into one little package.
Yes, and I think all of those points are quite legitimate. Having been a homicide prosecutor myself, I know that cooperation from the community in making cases against the bad guys is critical. And if you don't have the trust of the police and law enforcement officials, you cannot solve crime problems. But of course, on the other hand, you need a cooperative police force that's willing to go out and put their lives on the line to fight the bad guys. So it's a really delicate balance, not to scare the police out of aggressive policing, but on the other hand, to make sure that they honor and respect the legitimate law-abiding citizens in these neighborhoods. And hopefully, the Department of Justice will find a way to achieve these two competing goals.
It is a difficult challenge, to say the least. Paul Callen, thanks so much for being with us.
Okay. Thank you, John.
All right.
Thanks. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. That's all of that's true. All of that has some element of truth to it, if not a whole lot of element of truth to it. And Chicago, I mean, we have a police force that these guys, as I was speaking earlier about being proactive, they're not proactive in some of these neighborhoods and communities. And the bad guys know this. The bad guys say, hey, wow, the police, I mean, they are afraid of us. They're not going to do this and do that because they're afraid they're going to wind up on YouTube or in jail or being sued. So the police back off on a lot of this stuff in the community, because one of the things I've heard, that they don't make too many stops, even when they should make stops, is because there's too much paperwork for them to do after the stop or during the stop. And so Chicago has a long way to go. And I've always, if you've been listening to the show, then you know that I have really been getting in the ass of the police in this city for not doing their jobs, or being afraid to do their job, or being hesitant to do their job, or thinking about not doing their job because, you know, where they may find themselves with the Chicago Police Department. And that's not fair. Of course, when police go out here every day, they're putting their lives on the line. That's no doubt about it. It's rough being a police in the city of Chicago. But when you put on that badge and strap on that gun and get in that patrol car, you are a police officer. You are expected to serve and protect, not to just boo-hoo, gloss over crime, not to investigate a crime that has been committed because you feel that, you know, somebody might be around, close around with a cell phone camera recording everything. You know, so, you know, you can't, and the police officers are doing it. I think this latest justice DOJ investigation in the city of Chicago is going to cause, like the person said, is going to cause the police officers in the city of Chicago to be more apprehensive. They're already wearing video cameras, you know, recording their every move. The reason why they're wearing video cameras and they have dashboard cameras inside of their cars is because the police lie. They lie about what took place on a stop or when they're out on a call. They'll lie about it. So they had to have cameras so the top officials can see what really is going on. You know, so, and like I said before, I don't have no ill will towards Chicago police officers. I just wish they would get out there and do their jobs, because I think if these guys would get out there and do their jobs, crime will go down. If they had a plan to end these shootings that's going on every day, every night, I mean, massively over the weekends, it would be greatly appreciated by families who are afraid to go outside, afraid to walk to the store, afraid to go to the park, afraid to play on their front steps or porches. This is crazy. Then you've got students and young children writing letters to the Chicago superintendent saying, hey, saying basically, protect us in our neighborhoods. We don't want to get shot. These kids are writing letters to the Chicago police officers in some of these bad neighborhoods saying, please protect us. And this is just heartbreaking. I mean, these kind of things have to touch your heart. The little kids, I mean, 6 or 7, 8 years old, writing letters to the police superintendent saying, we don't want to die. We want to live. Can you protect us? And this guy is spinning and talking all over them, you know. So it's rough, you know. The police department gets paid to serve and protect, and that's not going on. Even some of these officials have admitted that. We're going to get better. We're going to get better for 2017, excuse me. And so far, I think since the year has started, there's been about, you know, 10 to 15 killings in the city of Chicago already in 2017. In 2017, there's been murders all over the place, shootings. Statistics are starting to pile up. I don't know what they're doing. And I've said this before. These public officials in the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois, they have to make bringing down these horrible crime statistics from 2016 their first priority. Nothing should be on the burner except for getting this crime situation in the city of Chicago straight. I know they have other things they want to do, breaking ground for this or that, signing bills for this or that, or doing this, that. But they have to make, it should be a priority that they make solving the crime in the city of Chicago number one on their agenda. On their agenda. And I just don't see that, folks. Folks, I just don't see that. I don't see it happening. You know, in some of these neighborhoods, I don't see it happening. You know, but like I said before, if you've been listening to the show about me railing against the Chicago Police Department, I think that we should vote these guys out. And if the police out here on the streets patrolling, if they are not proactive in doing their jobs, they should quit. If they're afraid to go into these neighborhoods, if they're afraid to stop people who ought to be stopped and searched, then they should quit. Of course, police put their lives on the line when they go out here on a call. But that is what they signed up for. they are getting paid a good salary. That's what you sign up for. If you change your mind and you don't want to do it, quit and let somebody take the job who can be effective in doing a rough and tough and tumble job. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, 705 straight up in Chicago. I believe it's about 35 to 40 degrees here. It's balmy. It's rainy. It's not that cold out there, but because my windows, the windows here, they're not icy. So if there was, but it's winter. What can I say? And we are in the studio by the lake, and it's wonderful. It's beautiful. I mean, every day you wake up, it's a wonderful, wonderful day. And I'm going to say this to some of the people out there who are not making anything of yourselves. Make something of your life. Make somebody proud of you. Be proud of yourself. Be proud of yourself, you know. And if you're proud of yourself, other people will be proud of you also. People like being around interesting people. People love being around people who maybe, you know, can help them along in their lives or help them along in their careers. Everybody wants to move along. I mean, I have authors on the show. I have guests on this show. Every guest I have on this show, they're on this show for one reason and one reason only, to promote whatever they have to promote. And my show is a vehicle for that. It's helping them to promote. It's getting their name out there. It's getting their books out there. It's helping them to be successful. And I think everybody within my voice should be successful, or they are capable of being successful. But the only thing, as I've said earlier into the show, the only thing that's going to stop you from being successful is you. Is you. Hook up with people who are successful. You have to hook up with people who are successful. Research people who are successful. If you know people who are successful, contact them. If you know people who are doing something that you want to do, get in touch with them. If you know people who are interesting, and maybe they have something that you might can learn from them, contact them. Read all kinds of books. I mean, if it's something you don't know that you want to know, research or contact the people, family, friends, or acquaintances, people that you know that are doing what you would like to do, and talk to them about it. You're not going to get anywhere in your life if you are quiet. You're not going to get anywhere in your life if you are shy. You're not going to get anywhere in your life if you're not proactive, if you don't go out there and get what you want. Nothing is going to come to you in the house. Nothing is going to come to you laying around in the house doing nothing, hanging around outside doing nothing. You're going to get older and still be doing nothing. There has to be something that you want to do. There are plenty of people out here, organizations, agencies out here that will help you to find your dream, but you have to contact them. They're not going to contact you. You want to get out of your rut. And as I've said before, it doesn't matter your age. It doesn't matter your age. Look at Hillary Clinton running for president. She's 69 years old. Bernie Sanders almost had this thing. Look how far they've gone, being in their late 60s and middle 70s. Donald Trump, 70 years old, 71 years old, and he's the president of the United States. And you're going to tell me that you're 45 or you're 50 and you think that you still can't be anything? You think you're too old to follow that dream that you've always had, or to be what you always wanted to be? make something of yourself. Do not let age interfere, because age is nothing, as they've always said, is nothing but a number. The only thing that's going to hold you back, keep you from being what you want to be, is you. It's you. It's you. I don't care if you're 60, 61, 62, 63, 70. You can still follow your dream. You can still go for that American dream. As long as you're not dead, you can be anything that you want to be. It's just that simple. But you ain't going to be a damn thing if you don't make it happen. You have to make it happen. You want to be a radio host. Research it. Call into shows. I mean, if you want to be a recording star, you want to be a comedian, you want to be a teacher, a social worker, whatever, an engineer, construction worker, go after what you want. Hang out with interesting people. Hang out with other people who are successful. Because if you don't hang out with other people who are successful, if you don't contact or get in touch with people who are doing something, people who are interesting, then you will never get anywhere. If you're shy, if you don't talk, if you don't speak up, if you're not proactive, people are going to leave you in the dust. And it will be no one's fault but your own. No one to blame but yourself. You are here. Everybody has a talent. We all have talent. If you don't use that talent, if you don't utilize that talent, if you fail to realize that you do have talent, then all I can say is that the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio is always trying to make the world a better place.
Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of Chicago, and we are helping to make the world a better place, one show at a time. Thank you for listening. Thank you for finding the show, downloading the show, and just having a great time. Here we go.
All right. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. That was a little bit of that. I wanted to mention this, but I never got around to mention it, to talk about it. I kept on talking about other things. And so, but anyway, I want to talk about the Cubs at the White House. They were at the White House. They visited Obama. I believe it was on Monday or Tuesday, Martin Luther King's day, birthday. And but hey, the Chicago Cubs was at the White House. I mean, Obama, they were laughing and joking, and I guess they took a group photo. And there's been some controversy saying that the Cubs were wanted to make it to Obama's White House before Donald Trump took over. And but it was great. It was great. And they are talking about another World Series for 2017, later on this year. Yeah. Another World Series. That's great. That's wonderful. I wanted to say something about the Chicago Bears. They used to say, if you can't say something nice about someone, don't say anything. Do not say anything. So I won't say anything about the Bears. Oh, okay. The Cubs were at the White House. I want to say one more time, congratulations on the World Series Cubs. 108-year drought broken. Oh, wow. You know, these guys, these young guys, going back again to making something of yourself, this group of Cubs, a bunch of young guys, a bunch of talented guys, good-looking guys, strong guys, determined guys, obviously, each one of these guys who are on this Cubs team had a dream. They had that dream. And that dream came true. The dream that they had was the dream of going to the World Series, and they did it. They did it with talent, a lot of effort. They did it with support of others. This is what I've been saying, folks. If you want to, you have a dream of going somewhere or doing something great. It's just all it takes is effort on your part to do it. No one's gonna walk in your apartment or your home and hand you $1 million. It ain't gonna happen. It hasn't happened so far. You want to be successful, be like these group of young guys, these Cubs, and go out there and get what you want. Fight for what you want. Work hard for it and utilize that God-given talent. And this is what these guys did. And they went out there and they brought home that trophy from the World Series, 2016 World Series. This is great. That was great. If these guys can do it, you can do it. And as I've said, just because they're in their 20s or early 30s doesn't mean jack. If you're in your 40s or 50s, you probably know that you can't play baseball. You know, you're too old for it. Your legs aren't that good anymore. But that doesn't mean you can't be a teacher or a social worker, play golf maybe. You know, it's just that I just love to see it when young people make something out of themselves. I really do, especially young people. I love it when young people come to me, call the show, and ask for advice on this or that. You know, I love it. And I don't mind helping people to try to reach their goals, because I do it every day, all the time on this show. Because that's what this show is all about, is making the world a better place, one show at a time. That's what I write about. Everything that I write is basically the same thing, making the world a better place, one story, one book at a time. Because it doesn't matter what I write, it's always going to be something in there. I was talking yesterday with, what was her name? Well, anyway, I can't remember some of these, my guest's name. What was her name yesterday? Wendy Hinbest, okay. I was talking to her yesterday about, you know, same thing, making the world a better place. You know, it was a lively conversation, just like it was a few minutes ago with with Corby Midland. It was a nice conversation. And that's what it's all about. That's what this show is about. Making the world a better place. Making you a better place. But you have to do it for yourself. I can just throw it out there for you. I can give you the platform, but it has to be you who's going to push yourself into being a better person, to making the world a better place. Because like the late Michael Jackson once said, man in the mirror, if you want to make a change, look at yourself. If you want to make a difference, look at yourself and make that change. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me all over the place. Check out my author's page on Amazon, www.amazon.com/author/G Wilder. You've been listening to the Talk About Time. Make 2017 a great year by listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. And that's just not written. I mean, it's written in stone. I mean, if you're going to listen to anybody, listen to me. All righty. Let's go right ahead. Let's see what we have. It's about 7:21. Let's see what else we can do here before we. Yeah, I do think America needs leaders. And maybe that's a final point I'm going to try and make here. America does need leaders, but we are lacking in leaders. I mean, I was just hearing that Chicago Public Schools, they need substitute teachers. They need about 600 substitutes because some of the other teachers, they call off a lot. And then once they call off, they could call off for anything. Maybe probably sick. But then once a teacher calls off, you know, there's no one to replace that teacher. That those students are just sitting in the room, classroom without a teacher. So we do need leaders, a bunch of leaders. We don't need followers or watchers. We got a lot of those folks or spectators. We need people who know how to lead. And one of the criteria for leading, you have to talk, you have to speak up. You have to talk, you have to speak up, and you have to move people. You have to be able to move them in a positive way, you know. You got to get people to do what you want them to do in a positive way, you know, and we need a bunch of leaders. We need leaders. We need truthful leaders. I'm not necessarily saying politicians. You don't have to be a politician to be a leader. I mean, you could be a leader in your community. I mean, hey, wow. And when you are a leader, people look up to you. People admire you being a leader. You don't want to sit back and watch other people go places and do things because you're inactive. Too many people are out there doing that, watching other people do things. Or you're sitting back on your couch saying, hey, wow, expecting other people to do the things that you can do for yourself. You know, don't do that. Get out there, get involved. If you don't like your government, if you don't like what's going on in your government, city government, state government, whatever, if you grab, like Obama said, grab a clipboard, get you some signatures and run for office. Become a leader in your neighborhood. People will look up to you for that. People will come to you for advice and understanding and knowledge. Be a leader. That's all it's about. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We got about 5 more minutes left into the show. And we were talking about making something of yourself. And I want to thank my guests once again. Author Corby Midland. She was great. She was wonderful. I got to get this link to her. All righty. Make something of yourself. Be something. Let me be proud of you.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven
heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl. Heaven help us all.
All right, we're back. We just about got a little over 60 seconds left in the show. And I want to thank everybody for listening and tuning in and being a part of the show. Thank my guests. I want to thank all my guests so far this week for being on the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live on Facebook and all over the place. I just hope you guys join me tomorrow. I will be here tomorrow, but we'll be off Friday, Saturday, and Sunday and back here on Monday. But we will be here tomorrow. So set your dial for that. write it on your calendar or whatever. We will be here tomorrow. All right. Bye-bye, everybody. So long. Thanks for listening.